You just can't help it. Nobody can help it. Doesn't matter how clever you are. Like, Konza was falling for it, for fuck's sake. Konza doesn't fall for anything.
Not you, Konza.
Hi, guys. Jack Grealish here. Delighted to say that I've signed a new deal with Aston Villa. That morning sky gave me a look. So I left while you were sleeping.
That's all it took. Pep Guardiola, eh? Here we go again. You know, on a week where you might have been guilty of thinking everyone understood that football was bigger than any one man, Pep Guardiola steps forward. Pep Guardiola looks at a stupid, vicious, and oh-so pointless studs up, late tackle halfway up a teenager's leg. And Pep Guardiola, not one part of his brain thinks, you know, it might be a bit unfair and a bit irresponsible of me to spend the next 5 minutes howling about the injustice of it all. I mean, where does this guy get off? Like, where's your moral compass now, Pep Guardiola? Like, you know, all these people who were coming out and applauding him for not saying anything, by the way, on Monday when he was asked about it, basically batting it off. Given some vague answer about the Super League, that is. Like, you know, where's this great Pep Guardiola now? He can't just see what a stupid tackle that was by John Stones. Never mind, a dangerous fucking tackle. And he can't just look at it and say, what are you doing, mate? Like, you've let me down yet again. Do you know, like, at what point does Pep eventually put aside all the other advantages that he has anyway, the fact that he's definitely going to win these matches, but that little panic that seeps in every single game, even against Aston Villa, for Christ's sake, he can't just relax, and he can't just call it as it is, a ridiculous tackle from John Stones that was 100% a red card, and it was actually looked at, it was looked at on a video replay by the video assistant referee, then the referee who was being absolutely hounded by Pep and all the Man City players all game, and I thought he might not make this fucking call, but he was forced to look at a replay, and then he gave the decision, and Pep thinks it's within his rights to continue crying about it. Like, disgusting, to be honest.
It was absolutely disgraceful. Now, when are people going to admit that Pep Guardiola is a cunt? I feel like I'm out here on my own sometimes. The man is a narcissistic, entitled arsehole. I get it. He's convinced his billionaire owners to spend $200 million on a back four and then convinced them to do it again when he couldn't get the first lot to defend. That's impressive. He's an impressive man. He gets his incredible, expensively assembled squads to play beautiful and effective football. And he always seems to be innovating. But he can be two things at the same time. And Pep Guardiola is a brilliant manager and a cunt. This is a man who not only defended his player for posting a racist tweet, he joined in. He said the images were similar. One was a human, one was a cartoon piece of chocolate. Pep Guardiola is a scumbag. He's a defensive, narcissistic arsehole, and he gets away with it because his teams tried to score. I mean, he has to have a sense that tackle was heavy. He now knows that the referee who has been riding them all game has had a look at a replay of it. If a red card is given after those two things, then it has to be a red card. Just look at the replay. All your coaching staffs have a fucking iPad. Have a look. Don't make an absolute tit of yourself again.
The fourth officials in action on the sideline as well, like, just emboldened them. Like, it's like Pep is so far above these English Premier League referees yet again. Like, you know, English Premier League officials are sort of coming into question. They got that decision right, so maybe it doesn't really matter. But Jesus, they can be pushed around. You know, Peter Banks was crying out to be bullied in that game, and Man City were gladly taking him up on that offer. Like, you're talking about him defending his racist player, his player for being racist. Like, that's obviously the, for anybody who passes by, and I don't think it passed anybody by, but Bernardo Silva and Mendy. And yeah, Pep doubles down and then brings it up again. And I can't believe that actually never came back, you know, a few months later when we started going through the archives, when we started having a, a bit of a look at ourselves and actually asking questions of people and stuff that they've said in the past. Pep Guardiola seemed to get away with it. Like, he seems to get away with everything. Like, you're right. Like, Pep is brilliant. And that doesn't mean he's not a cunt. And him being a cunt doesn't mean that he's not brilliant. Yeah, we can differentiate those two. But just the arrogance of him and the rudeness. And like, as I say, it's irresponsible to react to a tackle like that the way he did.
And it couldn't have been any clearer that it was a red card as well. And even the commentary around it, they were saying he'll be lucky if he doesn't get sent off here. It's like, what are you talking about? This is so far from him being lucky if he doesn't get sent off here. It would be an absolute scandal if he didn't get sent off.
Yeah.
That is the picture that's next to a red card in the FIFA rulebook. That's what they show you. That's what a red card tackle is.
And yet again, it was John Stones. Yet again, it was John Stones freaking out in a position that he doesn't need to be freaking out in. He's just a glutton for punishment, really. Like, he just does not need to be in that position. And he puts himself in it, and he doesn't need to then act the way he did from that position. And the way he did, like, it was a scummy tackle. Like, you know, there's an argument that some people are making that, you know, he was going for the ball. Like, you know, that doesn't matter anyway. Like, regardless if he's going for the ball, it's up to him to have a bit of fucking control over his body and not go stud first into somebody's knee almost. Only because Ramsey had lifted his leg that it didn't go into his knee. But then, like, you know, John Stones is... I can't be too hard on him because I don't think there's anything more beautiful in football than John Stones misjudging the flight of a ball. And here we are again on the right side of the Man City defence. A high, hopeful ball going up over the top. Actually, it was a decent ball this time. It wasn't the same as the one in Wembley for the League Cup final last year. But John Stones just conspires against himself to fall flat in his face yet again, releasing the Villa attack who like otherwise wouldn't have a chance from this. Like, bloody Samatta scored at Wembley because of John Stones. And now, like, you know, you give Ollie Watkins a chance like that, he's going to put somebody through. And like, John McGinn did really well, lovely finish.
Yeah, we can always rely on John Stones. He's got such a consistent output. He's absolutely lethal. He has more goal involvements for Villa than Samigol, and he's only played for us 4 or 5 times. I mean, the goal is absolutely brilliant from the 5 Villa players. It's really clever and brilliantly executed from Target and Mings. And it's a lovely little flick around the corner from John Stones, and it's a brilliant pullback from Watkins and a lovely finish.
A flick around the corner from John Stones. What about the Foden goal? I think people are giving him too much credit for being cheeky, not looking at the ball. Like, I actually just think if a ball's coming across like that, it's going behind you, and you're trying to make sure you get your foot around it and get your body over it, you naturally sort of turn the top part of your body, and your head turns away then. Now, it did look a bit weird that his eyes and everything were completely just looking across the pitch. But I do think it was just a consequence of him wrapping his foot around it and twisting his body to make sure he got a proper connection.
Yeah, I mean, because it's Foden, I'm inclined to believe that he did it intentionally. And because it's Foden, that's definitely why people are talking about it. I mean, it's super slow motion. We don't actually know what's happening there. You can't actually tell what's happening in real life from a replay like that. And also, it would just be utterly pointless for him to try to give the keeper the eyes. Just put your foot on it and it's going into the net. The pullback's perfect. That goal just absolutely summed up Man City in the first half. The speed of thought from everyone involved, the intensity, the ruthlessness, the precision, even, you know, it's an incredible goal. And so it's why we love football. But yeah, we don't have to start pretending that Foden's done something brilliant with his body shape for the goal. He's doing enough during that game. But as beautiful as the goal was, marvellous Nakamba, what are you doing, son? He just watches Foden play the ball and just watches the ball while he drifts into a pointless position in the box. He's not even taking up space. He's opening up space. He's telling Silva where they play it. He hasn't a fucking clue where Foden is. And Foden punishes it, obviously.
This is a good topic that you've raised, because Douglas Luiz getting a lot of abuse tonight. Rightly so. He was not good. He was very bad, and we'll talk about him a lot later. But like, Nakamba gets away with it because there's just no expectation of him. Like, the only expectation people have of Nakamba, and it's overblown, it's overhyped, is that he can help defensively. And he doesn't do that. He just watches everything. Nakamba just takes up the best position of any Villa fan to watch these games on film. That's what he does. And when I saw the team tonight, I was like, what? You know, I know we're all guilty of of having a knee-jerk reaction when you see a team sheet, but like, this team was weird. Like, you know, it's like, oh, Brennan, Jacob Ramsey's here, first name I saw, and then it's like, well, Nakamba's here too, and Louise and McGinn. And, you know, on some level, I got it in that it was a very, very flat 4-5-1 for a defensive shape. And, like, you know, you're going to be forced into that anyway with City, so it made sense to just set up with it from the off. But, like, really, apart from that first 20 seconds, like, Villa were so flat. Like, you know, like, the annoying thing there tonight, and again, like, expecting to lose against City, like, you know, we don't need to qualify that anymore tonight, but City were there to be taken, especially in the second half. Like, as soon as Stones got sent off, which, you know, was probably a hindrance to Aston Villa having John Stones taken out from that match, but as soon as he was off, City just sort of rested on their laurels and never got back out of it. Even when Matt Cash got sent off, they didn't step it up a gear, and Villa just kept going down the gears, if that was possible.
Yeah, he probably should have taken Nakamba off earlier, but I don't know if... It's hard to tell how anybody played in the first half. City were absolutely fucking brilliant. I haven't seen City play that well in a couple of weeks, or months maybe. Like, they were absolutely zipping the ball around. Everybody was running non-stop. The angles of the runs were perfect. The overlaps, the interchange, it was all absolutely brilliant. It's horrible to watch, obviously, but City were incredible. They played with just an unbelievable intensity, and scoring early fucked over everybody, and particularly marvelous Nakamba.
Do you remember that that media tournament that we played in last year, 2 years ago? And, like, you know, it was all going really well. Like, we had a good team finally. We made it through the groups. I think we topped the group. We won the quarterfinal match. We were fucking flying. And then we had to play this group of ex-pros in the semi-final. And, like, you know, they're all 40, or at least. But they're ex-pros, and they just fucking destroyed us. And, like, you were going into it thinking, well, you know, we're all going to be really honest. Like, we know we're all fit. We're all tuned in. We all know what we're doing. I just couldn't get the ball. Like, the ball just stuck to their feet, and everybody knew what they were doing. This basically isn't the same, but it's the equivalent. Like, you know, like, Man City to the rest of the league are what that team were to that tournament. Like, you know, just a group so far above everybody else. They have so much time on the ball. They control the ball so easily. They know where you're going to run to naturally by the shape of your body, and they can just fucky around the place. Like, you know, it's just easier for teams, and it's easier for City.
Yeah, I never wanted to talk about that game ever again, let alone in public. But that is the difference. Whenever you can ping the ball into somebody and they're going to kill it every time, then you just have the defense just has no time to react. You just can't get near them, and the player is passing the ball, can play it faster and faster and faster, and because he knows it's going to stop, he knows it's going to stick, and they're getting it out of their feet too quickly, and it's gone again. They're just absolutely brilliant, but of course they are. Every player costs 50 million.
Well, you say that, but I've got a theory in WhatsApp Wednesdays, so let's get to it. It's just the same run to the byline over and over. Stop fucking panicking. I've seen enough of these boys now, they know what they're up to. Like, fucking John Stones is doing it as well. It's that automatic. Like, you know, when there's nobody else to do it, he will sprint into the byline. It's either an overlap or an underlap. It's usually an underlap. And, you know, it's obviously very effective. I can't believe more teams aren't doing it. Like, it is relentless. Like, City come into that sort of... It's not the wing, and it's not inside. It's sort of halfway between the wing and inside, obviously, in their corner of the box. And then they just pepper the byline with runners. And what that does is it drags the midfielders who have come back to help out. It drags them to follow the runners, and it freaks the fullback out. And then that either gives them more space where Mahrez or De Bruyne or whoever the fuck you want punishes you, or did you just pass it to those players at the byline, then they pull it back, like the Foden goal? But it just works over and over and over, and I'm thinking, like, why do you let that work? Like, you know they're going to do that. Surely we've watched enough tape going into this game. Even, like, I saw enough evidence in the first half of it, like, you know, to try and do something at halftime. I know your question is, what would you do? And it's a good question. But I'm thinking, like, just let them have it on the byline and then try and ward off everything else. Try and box them there. Like, they're not going to score from the byline. So let Emi Martinez sort that out if they come too close. And then just manage everybody else in the box and watch that bloody pullback that you keep getting caught with all the time. Let the player have the ball on the byline, see what happens.
It is incredible because City have been doing this for 4 years. I mean, Sané and Sterling both got 25 goals one season just from doing this.
Yeah.
Just doing the same run, both of them doing it, playing it back to the other one. It's absolutely incredible. Just did it all season and then continued it for the next 2 years. And nobody is reacting to it. Dean Smith knows Man City do this. So does every other manager. And this is what makes it so interesting. This is rife for a sports psychologist to have a look at. Because what is making these players do that? They're told before the game that they have to be wary of this. But they're all still getting suckered in. It's John Stones. Never mind, let him have it in the byline. Let John Stones have it in the byline.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, it is, because I after a while I'm watching it thinking, right, how does this keep working? Never mind, like, you know, keep happening. And I get, you know, maybe you want to follow them, or maybe you are going to get distracted. But then there was one stage somebody had the ball in the byline, and this is the one that Emi Martinez actually blocked the cross then coming in. But it was actually so lucky that he did, because Tyrone Mings, it's not that he fell asleep, but somebody had gotten free behind him, because it's just, it happens so fast, and then he's watching somebody on the outside of the box, or he's looking for this pullback. Meanwhile, this guy has run in. He's looking for the ball across the box end, but maybe that's the answer. Let them have that ball across if they can get it. But Martinez will block it probably. I don't know. It's hard, but like the way people are trying to counter at the minute is not effective. And they need to start making allowances for the person to have that ball, because they're going to get it. Nobody stopped them getting the ball there. And you obviously don't want to give them space at the edge of the box, because they've punished enough people because of that. So we have to start thinking of a different plan. And it has to be what happens when they do get it. And like, yeah, let's all just, if we all just mark this man in the box, like, you know, it'll be grand. The odd time somebody might do something amazing to get by.
Yeah, like, it's the speed of their play though as well. Like, your head's absolutely scrambled. Like, sorry, it's not just the speed of the play, it's the fact that they had the ball for the previous 20 passes as well. You don't have the ball, you're fucking knackered. And it's just the speed with which they ramp it up. And you just panic. You just do. If the ball goes past, Phil Foden runs past you, you run with him. You just can't help it. Nobody can help it. Doesn't matter how clever you are. Like, Konsa was falling for it, for fuck's sake. Konsa doesn't fall for anything.
Not you, Konsa. Yeah, like, it's actually interesting. You could be onto something. This could work. Because Pep was talking about Foden earlier in the season, and just how good he is, and then what he needs to bring to his game now. And he used the word pausa. He needs more pausa. And it's basically, he was saying that Foden needs to know that you can't always just be playing, you know, at 100% intensity, speed. Like, you can't always just go for a killer blow. You need to know when to bring the tempo back down and then shift it again. And he's obviously just relying on melting defenders' heads by, like, those quick bursts and those quick changes and changing the tempo and lulling them into a false sense of security, or moving them over to the other side of the pitch, and then bang! You know, and then they're all worried about this person going to the byline, and then the ball's cut back and bang, goal. Yeah, he's a very good manager.
Yeah, he's a good manager. Conto, don't forget that.
Second WhatsApp whinge. Did that actually just happen?
I assume you're talking about one of the biggest cock-ups, one of the worst things I've ever seen in a football pitch. Given a free kick,
yes,
because he sees a professional footballer on the ground, yeah, saying that he's hurt. Sure, the ball would be in play for 60 seconds every game if that was the criterion. a professional footballer saying that he's hurt. I mean, fuck me. He saw the whole incident. He pointed play on, saw the player on the ground, and what? Felt sorry for him? Because has Peter Banks never seen a football match before?
I have to question whether he has or not. It could, because he looked at Zinchenko like, oh shit, he's on the ground. Do you know, like he looked shocked that the player was on the ground and thought, fuck, well, it must be a free kick. He's like, and you're right, he did. He waved play on. Like that's actually, imagine Martinez had a shift at that quicker the way he wants. Imagine Grealish was playing. Martinez would have had that out to Grealish already. And Banks would have said, hang on, whoa, there's a player on the ground here. Everybody stop what you're doing. And like, honestly, like that is all the validation. We talk about, like, you know, time wasters and why it always pays off for them. Like there's all the validation that any modern day football player needs to continue rolling around in the turf and screaming. Like, you know, you're going to fool some referees at the highest level. Like, I always have to say that as well. This is a Premier League referee who changed his mind. He made the decision, waved play on, like actually signaled his decision, and then changed his mind based on what he was seeing now and what he was hearing, presumably.
It was like playing five-a-side in work. Do you know when everyone just stops playing the game of football that we're all agreed to play because somebody might be hurt? It's like, we'll get back to him in a second. If the ball comes near him, we'll stop.
Yeah,
we're not going to stop now just because he screamed. The game's still in play. It wasn't a foul. Let's just play some fucking football.
Yeah. There was an incident like that in the Spurs game, and I really always try to avoid being, having one of those classic your da opinions, but... I think it was Lo Celso, just got caught in the ball, got minced by a Southampton player, lovely clean tackle, screamed, but like he was the furthest player forward and he got dropped to the ground in the tackle anyway, so like wasn't going to affect the rest of the game. And the Spurs players, as Southampton were counter-attacking with men over, they were all running with their hands up, you know, like making out to Southampton, we're doing something wrong here. And like, you know, eventually Spurs got enough players back to then, like, every one of them was, like, pointing out, you know, you have to put it out now because he's up, you know, and then suddenly he's bouncing up and going again. But we can't be pandering to that as well. Like, there needs to be more of an element of, we all know what football is. We all know what warrants an injury, and we all know, like, what warrants actually stopping the game. And we all know when somebody like Konsa makes an excellent tackle from behind, clean, go straight through to his keeper, and now Zinchenko's crying on the ground, that it's absolutely fine. We can carry on with our lives.
Yeah, we do.
Third WhatsApp whinge. Can you honestly remember a time when Douglas Luiz was involved in something and it didn't end up with a free kick to the other team? I'm including possessions in this.
What about that time he tried to pass a ball into the top corner from 45 yards out tonight? I mean, Douglas Luiz was all over the place tonight. He tried to play a crossfield ball at one stage, and not only was it terribly executed, he played it far too late.
Yeah.
Like, he takes so long to play it that the pass is read like a fucking book, a Dr. Zayas book. I mean, grow up, Dougie. It's time to move on. Move on to some young adult fiction, for fuck's sake.
And I think this was actually the pass that led to the free kick that we're talking about, the free kick that should never have been, to Peter Banks, the sickening free kick that he gave on Zinchenko.
I think, and that's the three worst things we've ever seen in a football pitch. Douglas Luiz's crossfield ball, the referee cock up, and Pep Guardiola revealing himself to be the biggest dick in world football yet again.
Yeah, like Douglas Luiz needs to decide what he wants to be. Honestly, because here he is now playing against Man City, and I'm actually a bit embarrassed that we were panicking about Man City buying him back. he's running around there, like not having a clue what sort of player he is anymore. He's lost it. And like maybe the positional change hasn't helped, but we all wanted him to have a positional change because he wasn't effective before that, so I don't want to give him that excuse. But he needs to be... I know he's young, right? He's 22, is he?
Yeah, something like that, 22, 23, yeah.
He needs to be actually talking to his manager and saying, like, you know, I want to be this player. Like, I should be holding our midfield. What the fuck is Nakamba playing for? Like, that's what he needs to be saying. I can do this myself. Like, you look at that midfield tonight. Yeah, again, we always talk about the Villa midfield since January. It's crying out for somebody to not only have a bit of composure and a bit of control, but it's crying out for somebody who knows what they're doing in defence and on the ball. Like, there's nobody taking the lead there. It's just three people panicking on the ball all the time. And I get that they're under pressure from Man City, but that's where a good midfielder can help relieve that. And Villa were getting the ball. Like, they were winning ball back off City, even though City were on flying form. They were winning it back, getting it to their midfield, which is exactly what you want, who were then shitting themselves and giving it away to the nearest possible blue jersey.
Yeah, it's so, like, he hasn't played well this season, and it's so bizarre because post lockdown, for those last 10 games of that season, he was absolutely immense. I mean, he was only second to Jack Grealish in the Villa team. He was incredible, and that's what got us so excited. That's what got us panicking about Man City wanting him back. And remember, this Villa team was incredibly solid defensively as well after lockdown. And they were winning games because they were being decisive in big moments through the midfield. Dougie was getting the ball and he was getting it to Jack Grealish. He was recycling it. He was doing everything you want from a top-class centre midfielder. And he's doing none of it now. There's not even a trade-off. It's not like he's lost one to get the other. He's doing nothing.
I actually think he sort of personifies the Jekyll and Hyde season that Villa have had, really. Like, no, that's the wrong term. Like, the black and white season that they've had from one half of it to the other. Because I think Douglas Luiz, we were raving about him earlier in the season, that he definitely tailed off before Villa tailed off. But, like, you know, if your midfield, if your engine room isn't, not only is it not going well, but if it's going really badly, like, that's going to affect the team. Like, so that's why they were going badly. Well, big reason for it before Jack Grealish got injured, and then obviously it got way worse. But when you've got a midfield that's not dominating any match and not winning their own battles and not winning the midfield battle and having a bit of control in there, then, like, you really are hamstrung. And, like, this is honestly, this is why like, people have been crying out for two strikers. We'll get to Davis later on, but it's because, like, they just want to bypass the midfield. Like, the midfield has been playing at such a low level that people, and I think fairly so, want to just say, get it in there, just get it up the pitch. You know, we've given up on football because, like, well, what's the point? Like, Villa are finally what, you know, the like of Martin O'Neill and Trapattoni, that they were convinced that Ireland were. You know, we don't have the players. Like, you know, let's stop kidding ourselves, get the ball up there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important. Everyone knows Villa need to sign some attackers and desperately need to sign wingers, but they definitely need to sign a defensive midfielder as well. They need to sign a defensive midfielder for whenever they're playing a three, and they need to sign a defensive midfielder who can play alongside Dougie whenever we're playing two, to teach him how to do it and also to hold his hand. That's such a big, big priority for Villa in the summer, because they need that player, and they need it to give us flexibility as well in the different types of systems and different ways we can play.
All right, some awards after this.
Mike Ashley has turned Newcastle into a discount sports company and appointed a discounted bargain basket manager. Glenn Roeder, Kenny Dalglish, Sam Allardyce, and Steve Bruce. What a fucking parade of cavemen. Like, that is the only reason Andy Carroll is a professional footballer.
Only Steve Bruce and Neil Warnock have got promoted more times than Mick McCarthy. That's not even a good stat, because the good managers kept their teams up and then progressed their careers. Dean Smith will never get another team promoted from the Championship because he won't be there. Brendan Rodgers won't get another team promoted from the Championship because he won't be there.
Pep Guardiola once again revealed himself to be a cunt. Do me a fucking favour, as if Jack Grealish needs to go play under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to progress his career. That is absolutely a step backwards.
Put this on record, United won't be within 10 points of the title. I genuinely believe that, and I'm not even trying to exaggerate, it's not hyperbole. 3-4 games of bad run, United are out of the title race, like that, and that will happen to them, that will definitely happen.
What gets Sean Dyche out of bed in the morning? Like, how does he do it? Imagine how exciting a job that would be. Imagine coming home and saying to your partner, I got a new job! I'm a football manager! And then going out and doing that with it? What a waste of time! Steve Bruce is a graying pair of slazzing your socks in the basket by the checkout that nobody wants.
Only one place to start, really. The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award. We talked about Douglas Luiz, his pass out to Zinchenko. Unforgivable. John McGinn trying another blind pass with his right foot, not even looking at what's happening inside, just thinks, I'll scoop this from out underneath my body, see what... Oh, shit, Bernardo Silva's away. Thankfully, a Villa defender, I think it was Target, saved his bacon. But there's two big ones that we need to get to. Because like it's sad that those two, your two midfielders just giving balls away to Man City of all teams. Like the fact that they're not even going to be in the run for this award is grim. Emi Martinez coming for the cross for the second goal, the winning goal. Like, geez, goalkeepers just can't be given big lumpy defensive midfielders an open net with when they're just trying to get their head on the ball.
Yeah, it's a really weak header from Rodri, so it's a massive shame that Martinez feels like he has to come out. But he feels like he has to come out because he's watching his big lumpy centre half, watching Rodri standing free in the 6-yard box. Mings is just there with Rodri standing in front of him, 2 or 3 yards. The only player that Mings can see on the pitch, the only player he has to worry about. And he doesn't even move towards him. I mean, yeah, Emi shouldn't come out, but I think he feels like he has to. Because Tyrone's doing fuck all.
Has... I'm being kind, maybe. Has Tyrone just read the flight of the ball better? Like, you know, Rodri's really just trying to get his crown of his head onto it there. Like, in the way he's going up. He's going up too early, if anything. Maybe that's wrong, because he scored.
So Mings is reading the flight of the ball well because he's assuming there's no other humans on the football pitch. I mean, like, yeah, if Rodri's not there, Mings has read it perfectly. Rodri is there! He's scoring.
Yeah, but like Mings knows that Rodri, from his position and from how early he's jumping, he can't get a good head on it. Like if Martinez doesn't come there, like that's not in any way a good header. Like I sound stupid because it went into the side of the net. You know, if Rodri wasn't 6'4", then Mings was absolutely bang to rights. But I don't know if he's calculated all this in his head, but like maybe subconsciously he's thinking, ah, he's not getting a... I don't need to go with him there because the ball is coming here.
He's in the 6-yard box! The ball is going to him? What do you mean? What are you talking about?
But all he can do is get a flick on the crown of his head facing away.
And into like, the net?
If your keeper doesn't fuck up, he just catches it.
Well, that's awesome. Mings should let people have free headers in the box on the assumption that Emi Martinez will just catch the resulting header. No. You're right, actually. Let's go back and give this award to John McGinn for playing a blind pass.
He shouldn't let people have free headers. But in his case, he's letting them have a free header knowing that he can't score, but he just wasn't...
What are you talking about?
He wasn't...
Everybody can score a free header from outside the 6-yard box.
But it wasn't a free header as such. It was he just got his head on it. There wasn't a header. It wasn't one of those ones where the keeper's just planted at the spot thinking, what the fuck am I defense doing? Do you know, because he's just banged the header in, a Mitrovic header I'm thinking of. You know, he's just jumped up, got anything on it. It was like a defensive header of anything. And just, because Martinez is balls up, he's gone in.
Just jumped up, got anything on it, and scored the winner.
All right, so we're adding Mings to this list then as well. But actually, it doesn't matter because the winner is clear for everyone to see. At 2-1 down, Man City giving up trying to score. Villa with an extra man. Like Matt Cash on Phil Foden. There's three elements to this fuck up, which is, you know, means that it's so far out on its own. Like any one of these three could win it. Like just giving the ball away to start off with, infuriating shit, basically. And then the way he reacts to a completely non-threatening situation. Like Phil Foden's taking the ball off him at left back.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Cash is just like committed himself so wholly, like giving Phil Foden the opportunity to skin him. Does not need to be diving in there. And then when he does dive in, he doesn't need to be mincing him 25 yards out. Like, you know, 25 yards out from Foden's own goals on the sideline. Like, it's so far away from being a dangerous situation. And also, even if it was a dangerous situation, which, again, couldn't be further from it, like, Cash, you're on a yellow card. Like, you know, this is worse. I would rather be 3-1 down with 11 men than have Cash go off the pitch. But like, we were never going to be 3-1 down is the point. I would rather give away the chance is what I mean.
Yeah, you'd rather give away a chance from 75 yards out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I hope Matt Cash went into the right change room after he walked down the tunnel, because he was playing right in the City's hands all night. He was dreadful from the start. Caught out for the first goal. Moronic to lunge in like that 2 minutes after being booked, and booked by Peter Banks, who was desperate to make it up to Pep Guardiola as well.
Yeah, like I think he came into this game, rightly so. We know he's marking Foden anyway, but Foden was amazing in Manchester when these two teams met, and we praised Cash that night because Foden got the better of him, but Cash just did enough to hang in there. He limited him. You know, he didn't win the battle, but like, he did as well as anybody would have done that night.
Mm.
But it was like that had scrambled with his head coming into this game. And, you know, he was just so pent up, I felt. Like, he was rash all night. There was one where Foden had a really bad touch, and all Cash had to do was take the ball out of defence or just pass it to Traore, who was free, and he just slid tackle him and give away the corner.
Mm.
You know, I know he didn't get a shout for that one. He cleared for a corner, but like, you know, he wasn't even going to look. You know, like that was a chance to look because it was such a bad shot from Mahrez. Yeah. Like, you know, there was loads of time to have a look and actually question, would Foden really be in here now? Like, you know, there was no way he would have been. He was on panic mode the whole night, and like, it led right up to that.
Yeah, he was on panic mode, and like, you know, it's slightly understandable if he wasn't a professional footballer. I mean, Foden was amazing, but like, even that one that they were all talking about in Sky, you know, where Foden takes the ball out of the sky, like it was an incredible touch from Foden, and he does so well to control the ball when it's caught underneath his legs. But like, let's be honest, the ball is caught underneath his legs.
Yeah.
If you want to mince Phil Foden, now's your chance, Matty. This is the time. Just kick through him and kick the ball, and definitely don't, like, he doesn't even do anything clever after that. Like, he just runs around him. He takes a couple of touches and goes around him. It is brilliant. But it was just on top of everything else that Matty Cash did wrong tonight, and just seeing that replay over and over again, it was frustrating.
Well, it's frustrating because, like, they were showing the replay, and as they were watching, like, what was happening there is Phil Foden was hacking the ball from underneath him and, like, hitting it off Cash and getting it past him eventually. And they were saying a couple of little flicks there as well. It's like, he's just poking the ball past him.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying to dig it out from the ground and underneath his body. But, like, I'm not taking away from Foden, but Cash definitely wins this award, even above Tyrone Mings, who had nothing to do with that goal. You let Glenn Whelan take a 90th-minute penalty award. Pep Guardiola holding Foden back for 3 years. Yeah. What was he doing? Protecting him from the tortures that have befallen Jude Bellingham? Look at what's happening to poor Jude Bellingham now when they've released him at 17. Did you want that to be your life, Phil Foden?
And make no mistake about it, though, Pep Guardiola will take credit for that, and people will. We obviously don't have the counterfactual, but every time I saw Phil Foden when he was 17, when he was 18, when he was 19, he was brilliant. He was always brilliant. He was always just this player. I don't think there was any need to hold him back. Obviously, I can't say that now because it has worked out subsequently.
Yeah.
He is now one of the best players in the world. But Jesus Christ. And it's particularly confusing as well because Pep Guardiola, and he was probably right, told us all that Phil Foden's one of the best players he's ever worked with. So why didn't you fucking play him?
Yeah. Like, there was absolutely no need to hold him back. He's clearly, like, you wouldn't even need to have seen him during those years that you're talking about. And to know now, like, he could not be this good right now without being that good last year or the year before. Like, the only reason he held him back was because he could. Like, he just had the luxury of it. But really risky decision considering he's lost, you know, Jadon Sancho himself, like, you know, by doing that. Phil Foden's even better. Like, obviously, Phil Foden played the long game, wanted to stick around under Pep, maybe knew that he was developing well under this guy. Anyway, I'm sure he was. Obviously, he has. But, just on top of it, just didn't need to from a footballing point of view, but also didn't need to play him. So, yeah, he gets away with it. He gets away with this one, but he's still nominated for the award. Keeping Marvelous Nakamba on at 11v10. There's so many reasons to not keep Nakamba on anyway, to not play him, but like I don't, when Villa have an extra man and Man City are deciding to, like, let's not let Villa score, like, I don't need to see Marvis Nakamba standing at number 10, overseeing everything. You know, just watching everything, like, unfold in front of him. Like, I don't need him in there. He's just taking up space, if anything.
Yeah, but he went to 4-4-2 and he didn't want Dougie and McGinn. He's tried that before. And Dougie McGinn without a number 10 in front of him is just even more bothersome, I'm sure. I mean, it was 11v10, but it was 11v Man City's 10. You know, I can understand why he left them on.
All right. Well, bringing Ross Barkley on. I actually didn't even finish writing that down. It was just, I instantly wrote it when I saw him coming on.
And sure enough, what was the first thing he did? He tried to play a 60-yard crossfield pass over the fullback's head that hit the ground almost as soon as it left his fucking foot. Jesus Christ.
He whipped in a good corner, that's all I'll say. And that was it. There was a 2-minute period where I thought, huh, he looks better on the left, what do you know? But I think he only looked better on the left because he was getting less touches.
But he got about 6 touches and he gave the ball away 3 times. There was that 60-yard crossfield pass. There was one outside the boot pass down the line to nobody. It was just an outside the boot pass to Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
And then there was one where he just kicked the ball to Foden instead of Douglas Luiz. Just in the centre of midfield. What are you doing? You can't just play blind passes against Man City. You never do that. Into centre midfield with the opposition advanced as well. You're mad. Under no circumstances do that. And it's against Man City. You need fucking locking up. If their fullbacks play centre midfield, for fuck's sake.
And that's probably why I'm happier to see him on the... I'm not happy to see him at all, but on the wing. But it's not a reason to play somebody out there either, that you just don't want them... You just don't want them to have the opportunity to play blind passes or to get caught on the ball. Like, that's just a reason to put somebody off the team, not out in the wing.
Exactly. If you don't want to play a centre midfield, you don't play him.
Yeah. Last one, bringing El Ghazi on. Just not picking on El Ghazi, but like we know what he's going to offer at this stage, especially against a good fullback, and that's very little. And I think maybe I'm just thinking, everybody got excited when they saw Chukwuemeke on the bench, and I've been seeing him ripping it up in the FA Youth Cup and for the under-23s, and it's like, yeah, like, you know, why not just play this guy? We know what we're getting from El Ghazi. It won't be much. Season's over anyway. Like, just get these boys on now. Like, what's the point in playing Barkley and El Ghazi from a logical point of view anyway, because, like, it's not going to, from a short-term point of view, because they're not going to get his results or help get them. And just from a long-term point of view, like, these guys might actually be quite important next year, hopefully.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, but like the game was still 2-1. It was our game in hand. It was like, you know, it was a free shot at it. We could have brought him on from that perspective, but we also, or Dean Smith certainly didn't think the game was over. He still thought there was something there to get. He didn't want to just take a risk by bringing on a 17-year-old. Like, El Ghazi has scored a lot of goals for Villa, very, very intermittently, but you know, he hasn't scored in a while.
Yeah, fair. I have Pep Guardiola winning this award, though. Phil Foden's too good to not be playing for all those years.
Agreed.
The Vyman meter going down, Matt Cash going down, Emmy Martinez, first time in a while. Going down, Douglas Luiz going down, Ross Barkley, along with his fitness for some mad reason. Like, this is mad. This boy is supposed to be coming back from fitness, and it seems to be getting worse. Going down, Keenan Davis. I batted for you, man. I was cheerleading for you. I was giving out about Dean Smith for not playing Keenan Davis more often. He comes on, he gets a half this time. Again, I was disappointed that he didn't start, especially when I looked at the team they start off with. He gets a full half. There's 10 men for only 11 minutes, thanks to Matt Cash. Keenan Davis' problem is that he doesn't believe he's going to score. You know, it's like that he's not fully committing to actually trying to score for those crosses that are coming into the box. And I mentioned a good corner from Barkley. Like, that's there to put in. Rodri puts that away with the crown of his head. But Davis is sort of like ducking underneath these balls. And like, there was a ball from Cash that he didn't seem to really go after. And it's like, yeah, that was there. And you didn't go for it. And then, like, I talked about the lack of... I talked about Man City being there for the taking in that game. That one-on-one with Kyle Walker, I didn't even know it was a one-on-one, but the ball was going out of play. Davis thought it was going out of play on the left wing for Villa. And he just stopped and watched it trickle towards the sideline. Like, you know, even if this wasn't a game of football, that would be a weird decision anyway. You know, like, just go get it and turn around. You can get the ball, have a bit of fun. You know? But he wanted to let it roll out, and then Kyle Walker just went steaming past him, kept it in, ran down the right wing. And like, this is a sub coming on as well. He's trying to prove himself. That's not good enough, but it summed up the whole performance. But definitely not what I want to see from Davis, who has to do more to make me win these arguments, basically.
Yeah, I think you've called it right there. I don't think he has the belief in himself. I'm not sure if Keenan Davis is ever going to make it. I think I've said this before. He's got a lot of really admirable qualities, but I just don't think quality is one of them, and that's unfortunate for a Premier League centre forward. I mean, he still hasn't scored. He was never going to score tonight after Cash gets sent off. But you're right. He did a lot of things where he could have gone at it with a bit more bite, a bit more aggression, but he didn't. And even the one where, you know, there's a question of whether or not he could have won the penalty when he nipped in ahead of Ederson. It's like, is he a bit cleverer there? He could have forced that contact a bit earlier. A bit like, I'm not advocating for him to dive, but it just goes to show that he just doesn't have it. He doesn't have the killer instinct, I don't think, to be a centre forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of me would still like to see him start a game, but in fairness to Dean Smith, there's the evidence. Like, I don't know what he would be using. It would be blind faith, really. It's me thinking, we saw him start the game after lockdown last year, like, you know, and he was good, but you're right, he was always just missing that, like, the nouse as well. Like, you have a proper centre forward, like, Ollie Watkins has everything, and he has that. And I'm not saying this in a Harry Kane type of, like, you know, cheating cleverness. I'm saying this in a striker. Like, he knows how to maneuver his body. He knows how to gain advantages. He knows when he's fouled. He knows how to draw a foul. Like, you know, knows how to get you up the pitch. Knows how to score. Yeah. You know, that's what Watkins is, and it's definitely not what Davis is. And it's a shame because this game just came too early for Wesley. Like, you know, he might have made it back otherwise.
Fuck Wesley. But I was delighted whenever I saw that sub being made. I was like, well, there you go, fucking hanging your balls out now, Dean Smith. Fair fucks to you. Yeah. 2-1 down against Man City, a man up, and you're bringing on a centre forward. That's just like, you know, that's what we all wanted him to do for the last couple of games. People have accused him of not making changes quick enough, of not being brave enough, of sticking to the same things. And there he goes and tries it. And it just didn't work out. It was annoying given how excited I was when I saw it. So I actually, whenever I saw him coming on, clapped my hands together and said, here we fucking go.
And going up, Ezri Konsa. That's about it, really.
Yeah, Konsa was Konsa.
And maybe Trezeguet, because your stock goes up when you're not playing. And now I'm thinking, God, I wouldn't mind Trezeguet playing out there. Last but not least, questions we can't answer, but probably will, coming up after this.
This is Paul McGrath. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
Did I read Tyrone Mings' lips right in the second half?
Yeah, I didn't see it. You're gonna have to explain.
I'm not a professional lip reader, but I know if I was a journalist in Spain, I would be going to town on this now. But it was so clear what he said, to be honest. I can safely say what he said. It was three syllables said two different ways. Like he tried to make a crossfield ball. I said, why do so many Villa players try to make crossfield balls? But he was on the halfway line. He tried to ping it across to the right-hand side. I think Traore might have still been playing. And it was under pressure. Somebody sort of blocked it down. He hacked it. It went way up into the air. Man City ended up winning the ball back. Or it might have gone out for a throw-in or something like that. But Ross Barkley, to his left, I assume, was complaining about something, because the camera was close up on Tyrone Mings then. And you saw him, what I believe to be saying, fuck off, Ross. Fuck off, man. But like, and, you know, somebody else might just bat that away and say, look, they're playing football. That's what happens. You know, people get agitated at each other. People have phones out. People tell each other to fuck off. It doesn't mean anything. But it was said with such, like, again, what I believe he said. It was like, just like such dismissiveness. Like, you know, who are you to be asking or to be demanding that I should be giving you the ball 4 meters away from me? You know, just fuck off, Ross. Like, you know, go do something, would you? Like, that's what it seemed like to me. And I was happy. I was actually thinking, I am sticking Mings up on the Vyman meter. But you shat all over that earlier.
Tyrone Mings, man of the people.
Yeah. So what do you think? Did I read it right or not?
I didn't
well,
see it.
Well, folks can't answer it, so. Does Dean Smith have to smile at Pep Guardiola when he's been a prick at full time to the referee?
I think Dean Smith's just a nice fella, and he just, like, he knows, you can see the way he looks at Pep Guardiola whenever Pep Guardiola's being a prick, and he knows exactly what Pep Guardiola is. But when it comes to the end of it, shake his hand and get off there. Like, you know, it's grand. Just smile and just don't speak to him for another 6 months. That's all Dean Smith wants.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. I'd say Dean Smith is a better frame of mind than I do. Because Dean Smith isn't too nice. Like, you know, he's quite happy to call people out when they have to be called out or to have an argument or to complain at referees. I like that element of him, especially the fourth officials as well. But yeah, this was Pep giving a big sarcastic thumbs up to the referee for daring to play 20 extra seconds of the 3 minutes that were added on at the end of the game. You know, and then he turns and gives a big sort of smile, to a big over dramatic smile at Dean Smith, who's smiling at Pep's gestures. And I just said, ah, fuck off. Like, it was straight after the game, so I just wanted Smith to you're right, like, you know, the right thing to do there is just walk away and don't worry about Pep again for half a year. But I want them to be like, what are you saying there? You know? But what does anybody gain out of that?
But like, he did this before as well. Was it this season at Villa Park where Pep was making an absolute tit of himself again, and he was roaring and screaming? And then I think Pep, something clicked where he realized, oh fuck, I'm in the wrong here. And then he tried to pretend like he wasn't actually fussed of it anymore. And he kind of smiled.
He was suggesting that Tyrone Mings was wasting time in the 30th minute. And that's what Smith was basically saying to him, like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then, yeah, he smiled and gave him a big, he stuck his hand way to his side. He gave him a big high five and laugh at it. And I said to you on the podcast, people should go back because it's actually at the very start. It's a preview to the podcast of the Man City game back in January, was it? And I said to you, I like that, you know, from Pep, like a bit of crack and stuff. And you said, he's a narky little prick, fuck off.
And I was right.
It turns out you were right. So walk away, Dean Smith. Does Jamie Redknapp actually think doing Zumba at the screen is good broadcasting?
Look, Jamie Redknapp doing Zumba at the screen is better than Jamie Redknapp talking about football.
Fair enough, we can throw that one out. Will people now learn that most people in the world are stupid?
What's this in reference to?
The Super League. Like, look, let's do a quick one on it. Obviously, we all got the result we wanted yesterday. But like, it's important that you all go away from this podcast tonight thinking that you should never overestimate the intelligence of people. You know, the worst thing in the world is just how many people are conditioned to believe that someone else is better than them. You know, someone else would do a better job. Honestly, like, too often, like, you know, you find all these millions and millions of people, billions, asking, like, you know, who am I to be that one? Like, who am I to speak up? Then what happens is you just assume that people in higher positions all know what they're doing and that they all deserve to be there. Like, go into any, like, I'd say this with confidence, go into any company in the world, the amount of incompetent chancers spoofing their way through, you don't have a clue what they're doing, making other people do the job for them or hoping that other people do the job for them. And then you have you have these numpties in the Super League trying to change the face of football as we know it with billions and billions, trillions of pounds at stake. Like, it would be billions of pounds of an investment, and then they're talking about making trillions of pounds. Like, this is the level that we're talking about. This is the biggest sport in the world that they're threatening to change forever, to make it one of the biggest businesses of all time, if not the biggest. And like, they don't have a clue what they're doing. Like, you know, you scratch the surface a little bit and you see that. You just assume that these boys would have things covered. And like, they have the affront to say like that they're actually trying to save football, but then they can't even provide any little detail. They can't give you one figure. They can't give you a timeline. They couldn't even design a logo, for fuck's sake. And like, and the first bit of resilience, I'm guilty of it too, because I said this on Monday when we did that bonus podcast. Like, I assumed that they were aware that there would be a backlash to this. Like, this actually interested me, because I was thinking, right, well, do you know when you sit down to have an argument with somebody? When you sit down to have an argument with somebody, you have a planned argument with somebody. Like, but do you know when you're thinking of arguments, and generally what you should do is think, like, what would be the counter argument to this point? Do you know, and that's how you start moving on society, never mind the argument. Like, you know, but that's what you generally should do anyway if you want to try and win an argument, never mind just think properly. But like, I assume that they would have thought, right, we're going to announce this. This is going to fuck football over. So there's going to be some resistance. Now we have to be aware of that, and we have to have a plan for that. So I was interested to know what their plan was. And like, one day of people saying that they don't like this, and they fucking folded. Like, they folded like John Stones under a high ball. It was the quickest, weakest, most pointless bit of administration I've ever seen. And this was like one of the biggest plans of all time at stake, and they didn't have a clue what they're doing. And like, honestly, I just reiterate the point: do not overestimate the intelligence of some people. A lot of people are smart, but most people, they are not, and this just proves it.
Yeah, and what was all this predicated on? A desire to increase their revenues so they can increase their profits. I've got a better idea. Don't spend 80 million on Harry Maguire. Don't spend $350 million a year on salaries on a bloated squad of average players. Man United gave Phil Jones a new contract 2 years ago. Phil Jones. He hasn't played since. And he's Phil Jones. $80,000 a week saved. There you go. And their second choice left back is on $100,000 a week. And he's shite. Chelsea spent $70 million on Kepa. They're giving him $150,000 a week. Their third choice left back is on $100,000 a week. I mean, these clubs are in an arm race of their own making with players' wages and salaries, and they're complaining about operating losses. Willian's getting $200,000 a week to not score for Arsenal. He hasn't scored for them. David Luiz and Granit Xhaka are on $100,000 a week. I mean, when you're all meeting up to figure out how you can pilfer fans, how about agreeing that you've let transfer fees get out of hand? Make an agreement on a salary cap per club. Like, I'm not trying to figure out ways to make these arseholes more money. But I'm accepting they're going to do that anyway. So let's come up with some strategies that will at least level the sporting playing field instead of trying to destroy competition. Like, how about we force them to be more efficient with their money instead of allowing them to create a fucking oligopoly?
Yeah. Yeah, like, it doesn't fucking matter how much money we waste here. Like, that's the way it is at the minute. You know, nobody in that meeting of the super people questioned, like, yeah, hang on, Granit Xhaka is your club captain? It seems like we're not the wisest with our money. Maybe we should bring somebody else in here in this meeting. But then again, like, the alternative is, no, look, it's a better alternative, but I wish that we would change and now focus our attention on the revamped Champions League. Which is just like there you go. There's another example of people just not having a clue what they're doing, and like the revamped Champions League is laid bare for everyone to see. 36 teams, you'll play. They're all in one league, but you'll only play 10 matches. And after those 10 matches, we will find the best 24 teams who will now advance. Like, where do you start with this one?
36 clubs in the same league, but each club only plays 10 of the 36, so they're not in the same league, right? Wrong. They are. Wait, what? So you're competing for qualification against teams that aren't playing the same games? Like, you can also qualify for this competition even if you finish below another team in your domestic league, so long as you used to be good. So if the Premier League finished today, the Europa League spot for the FA Cup winners would go to the league. And that would be Liverpool. So Liverpool would qualify for the Champions League after finishing sixth behind West Ham just because they used to be good and because Chelsea won the FA Cup and finished fourth.
Fuck
Spurs
me.
Could qualify for the Champions League even if City beat them in the EFL Cup because the EFL Europa Conference League spot, look it up, it sounds terrible, would come to them because they're seventh in the league behind West Ham. And because Pochettino got them to the final 2 years ago, and only teams above them on the club coefficients, apart from fucking Arsenal, will almost certainly qualify legitimately for the Champions League and won't need this fucking buy ball, this hand-me-down. Like, Spurs and Liverpool would qualify for the Champions League essentially because Man City did the double and Chelsea won the FA Cup because Spurs used to have Pochettino as their manager and Liverpool used to have Van Dijk as their centre-half.
Like, this is not the pyramid that Chelsea fans were protesting for. Like, it's just reeks of unfairness again. Like, and like, there's always a lot of randomness in all this as well. Like, they think it's not random, but if a team who finishes seventh in their league is making the Champions League, then it's fucking random. This is over a season. That's why we have a season, so we can decide where teams place fairly. The league table doesn't lie. Well, it does now, apparently. Very last one, and you're not going to like this, Liam. How long until the Mourinho to Villa chat starts?
Same cunt, different players. Isn't it absolutely hilarious that I went off on a rant about Jose Mourinho's man management skills, his inflexibility, the fact that not only is his only motivational technique to call his players shit, his technique is to do it publicly. And the next game week, he comes out with that shit. I mean, the stupidity, pitifulness, narcissism of that is just mind-boggling. But leaving aside, same coach, different players, that's not a defence. Those are precisely the points. Yes, they are different players. So maybe you should try a different approach. Maybe you should treat them differently. Same coach. Oh, so you do know you're a fucking coach then? Why didn't you fucking coach them? And the hypocrisy. The abdication of responsibility is ludicrous. And from a man who would walk past the fucking Mona Lisa and say she's smiling in the because he's in the room. Right? A team that he's managed has never won a game without him taking credit for it. And they've never lost without the players being blamed. As he was falling apart at Man United, he spent the last year just stripping away the responsibilities he thought a football manager had in every interview he did. Like, it's not his job to motivate players. They have to do that themselves. Tactics are overrated. You have to be a cunt. And the arrogance of that. His employers are watching this and paying him 10 million quid a year. There's another 10 million saved. Like, what are we paying you for? Like, what do you think you're being paid for? He was getting paid 200 grand a week. And he thought, and repeatedly said this in public, that he didn't have any responsibilities.
Yeah.
He thought his job was, before the game, to pick a goalkeeper, 3 6-foot-4 centre midfielders, and 7 other players. And then after the game, tell everyone Martial, Rashford and Shaw are shit. That's what he thought his job was.
And people wrap it up is the unfortunate thing about it all. Or one of the unfortunate things. But like, this is the point as well that's always it comes up. Like, so many of these managers who are getting so well paid, like we've had it at Ireland far too often in recent years, and then they come out and say, like, what do you expect me to do? Like, look at the state of the players and say, well, what are we paying you for? Like, nobody seemed to ask that question back to them then. Like, why am I paying you such good money if you just come in now and said you can do fuck all? And Mourinho is just the king of that bracket now. And, like, I don't know where he goes next. It must be international. But, yeah, like, I hope it's Sky, because he's a lot more fun on that. And he's a lot better than Jamie Redknapp. Anyway, next defeat coming up on Sunday night against West Brom at home. That'll be a tough one to take. So we'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure, about that. And Sam Allardyce will get a good doing in then. So do join us, and we'll see you then. Thanks for listening. That wind is calling my name, and I